I'm getting to the age to where introductions are beginning to sound a lot like obituaries. And so thank you. But I must tell you, those of you who are here in this part of the world, many of you know the legacy that Jim Wilbank, who was up at Fort Robinson for a number of years, has had on beef cow reproduction. And he's the person who, in fact, got me interested in this particular area. So I have a number of co-authors that you can see on the slide. Craig Peel is here. He's the director of the Western Center for Integrated Resource Management. Craig Lentz is a postdoc in the program. And George Seidel, you all know, is internationally famous for cloning, sex scene, and all of those sorts of things. So I'm lucky to have really good colleagues. So it's not working. So I just want to talk a few minutes about how important reproduction is in terms of the types of animals on ranches. Talk a little bit about heifer development and management, reproduction and mature cows, the management of bulls, and then what I really want to focus on for the last 5 minutes or so is the future. So this is just a slide that was given to me this week by Mark Inns from CSU. Thanks, Mark. And in fact, it just says what a number of other studies have said, that if you look at cow-calf or reproductive traits in general, in terms of economic value, they are 3 or 4 or 5 or 10, or some people say even 20 times more important than genetic traits for carcass and for feedlot. And so the point is that reproductive traits are very important if you're going to be a profitable ranching enterprise. So I want to just give you an example then. If you increase calf crop by 5% in a 300 cow herd, in fact, you end up, and I think you all can read that, I hope, with $6,000 additional worth of calves. And those are prices that I think you'll all agree, a 450-pound calf at 90 cents is being relatively conservative these days. Or, in fact, you can cull the open cows, save $4,500 in costs on your ranch, and, in fact, sell the cows perhaps for as much as $6,000, and, in fact, make money that way. But the thing you have to remember, and the thing a lot of times I think we forget, is that receipts from cull cows are estimated to pay at best about 60% of what it costs to replace them. So, if at all possible, get them pregnant. That's the motto to that. Now, reproduction in general, let's talk about the genetics for reproduction for a minute. Reproductive traits have a low heritability, and that's true essentially for everything except for twinning. And we could talk about twinning maybe tonight or whenever. Twinning has a whole different set of problems, particularly in beef cattle, where if you have a male and a female calf that are together in the uterus, in fact, you end up with a sterile female a majority of the time. So twinning is the one genetic trait that, in fact, is heritable. All right, so let's talk about heifer management for a few minutes. I think everybody agrees that we'd like to have heifers conceived by 14 months of age. Now, that's a really worthy objective, isn't it? But sometimes that's hard to do, okay? And so there are all kinds of things that have been done and been published to help you get your heifers pregnant. You can provide them extra feed. You can synchronize them using a protocol that contains progesterone. That will often induce puberty if they're not tubular yet. There are all sorts of things, but the question I just want to leave you with is, folks, if those replacement heifers won't cycle and breed by 14 months of age, do they have any business in your cow herd anyway? So you need to think about that, and you need to run the pencil on that and make that decision. But quite often, I think, people do all these things to get these heifers bred, and in the end, they may not live very long in your cow herd and continue to rebreed anyway. So my advice is to think about that and make certain that you've looked at the cost benefits of that sort of an option. The biggest problem then, certainly as well, is that heifers that you do get bred and that calve, the recommendation is that those first-calf heifers should calve with a body condition score of 6.5. So how do we do that in the West? How do we make that work? Well, number one, I think everybody agrees that, in fact, it's hard to feed a first calf heifer enough to increase her body weight once she stabbed and started lactating. So clearly, the most effective use of your resources is to feed that heifer while she's in the last third of pregnancy or so and try to get some weight gain on her when you can actually get weight gain and not try to do it after she's calved, okay? Now, there are a number of things that influence this, including genetics, nutrition, and environment, and we won't spend much more time talking about that. But there are lots of strategies out there to increase pregnancy rates for first-calf heifers. Again, provide them extra feed. Well, now we need to think about the economics of that, and we also need to think about this: what this cow, how she's going to perform in your herd the next year, the year after, those sorts of things. We also want to match the heifer to the environment. I think that's something that you've heard from a lot of people, and we'll hear more before the day's over. The thing I wanted to specifically address for a minute or two is that there now are recommendations out there that say if you remove the calf from the heifer for 48 hours, you can induce cycles. Folks, that's true. But think about the economic impacts of this. First of all, some excellent research done by the late Ed Pexton at Colorado State University unequivocally showed that removing that calf for 2 days reduces milk production for the rest of that entire lactation. And economically, that probably does not pay off very well. So a lot of people have not thought about the fact that removing that calf for even as little as 2 days could not only influence that lactation, but it may well, in fact, influence future lactations. Another recommendation that's out there is to wean the calf early after 6 to 8 weeks. Well, again, I think you can see that that's going to have direct economic implications, and my prediction there as well is that's likely to have lifetime implications for lactation in your cow herd if you, in fact, were to do that as a routine practice. So one needs to always do the cost-benefit analysis, and in this case, I think in general, we don't have enough information to really know the long-term financial effects of those practices. Well, the other thing that we have to deal with when we talk about replacement heifers is always this business of whether we want to artificially inseminate or whether we want to do natural service. And I have a bunch of relatives within 60 miles of this building that are in the beef business. And one of them in particular has told me more than once, you know, I buy my bulls, it doesn't cost me anything to breed a cow. And so I just wanted to show you some numbers just so that we can dispel that fact in a hurry, okay? So here are some data, admittedly from ABS, okay, where they have calculated, and you look at the bottom. So what they've done is say if you buy a bull for the purchase price at the top, and you assume that after 3 years the bull's worth $800, costs you $500 a year to maintain the bull, you have a 10% risk, and we all know about broken legs, broken penises, these sorts of things, and 8% interest. But let's just pick one of these. So if we bought a $2,000 bull that had 25 cows for 3 years, that's $47.44 per calf that it has cost you for natural service. Okay? Now, so let's focus on that. So $47.44. Remember that for a minute. We'll go to the next one now. The problem with the cost of artificial insemination is that it's really not very economical if you don't also synchronize estrus. So we have here the cost of estrus synchronization and AI for per calf. Again, and let's just pick one of these. Let's say that we've got 90% of our heifers synchronized and about 70% of them pregnant to that AI service. That cost would be $49.21. So if we go to the next one, 47 versus 49, maybe at least for heifers, there's not a lot of difference in what it costs you to use AI versus natural service. Now, you all know, in fact, that there are groups of individuals that will come in, synchronize your animals, breed them, do all that, and that's the basis for these numbers. Okay, now let's switch in and talk for a minute or two about reproduction in mature cows. And first, genetics are important, and I'm not going to say any more about seed stock producers. You have two speakers this afternoon that are going to talk about that. So, but it's clear to all of us, I think, that in a seed stock operation, the genetics are really what you're selling and all you have and the basis for your business, okay? All right, so I want to focus on, I'm sorry. Can we back up for a minute? Oh, no. That's all right. We'll get there. So, adding to the environment, and you've heard a little bit about that, and the body condition scores influence your ability to get. The only thing I want to say about genetics is that it's rare that, that an individual commercial producer. They're just average numbers due to heterosis in production in mature cows, and that's only 2 or 3. So, milk production is 9% on average. The pounds of calf weaned per cow exposed is increased 18%, almost 1/5. Let's just drop down and look at cow longevity. Increased 38% in crossbreeds versus straightbreds. And so, lifetime cow productivity is enhanced 25%. That's hard to give that up, okay, financially. So again, you have to make those decisions yourself. But the point is, you need to do the economic analysis and decide for you and your goals what's best. But quite often, crossbreeding is a very important part of a financially viable commercial operation for these reasons. Next. So, I won't say much about this. This was already talked about by our previous speaker, and Dick Clark here is in the audience. But what this does is make the point that if you look at the solid line, that body condition score in your cows, and if you look at that dotted line with the peak, that's pounds per day of metabolizable protein from a typical range. And the point I want to make is that, folks, if you are if it takes 2 pounds of metabolizable protein to produce 20 pounds of milk today, in fact, there's only 4 months that's possible. April, May, June, and July. And those are the same 4 months that, in fact, you're wanting to get this cow bred back, get her pregnant. And so the point is that not only do you need to match your cow body type to your specific environment of your range, but clearly you probably need to concern yourself about matching your calving and your lactational, your biology of your cow to your environment, annual environment as well. Okay, next slide. I want to spend just a minute or two to talk about bulls, just simply because I don't want to appear sexist. I'm a lot more interested in females myself. But breeding, I want to talk for a minute about breeding soundness exams. So clearly, a good veterinarian will look at structural soundness, and y'all know a bull that can't cover the ground is not going to breed a lot of cows. Skull circumference has been reported to be associated with early puberty in heifers. Semen quality, however, here to my mind is the key. Bulls that are fine blanks do not get cows pregnant, okay? And so you never know whether that bull has had frostbite, some injury, etc. And so every year you need to check your bulls. If you use bulls that have passed breeding soundness exams, in general, you'll have 6 to 10% more pregnant cows. More of the cows will be pregnant at the first service, therefore the calves will weigh more and presumably bring you more money. And in fact, Peter Chenoweth has estimated that for every dollar invested in breeding soundness exams, $17 in returns. Now, that beats the heck out of the stock market, the futures, or anything else, at least when I play them, okay? I want to just finish then and spend a minute or two talking about the future. And the first thing I want to say is that, folks, in my opinion, cloning is a long, long ways away and is not going to be of very much interest to anybody in this audience. So we're not going to talk about cloning. There's a lot of people that are interested in what it can do for them. But in fact, right now, it costs anywhere from $30,000 to $500,000 to produce a cloned animal, and that's just not going to be very exciting for most producers. Synchronized ovulation is going to be important, and I see that Dr. Zaleski's on the program, so I'm not going to spend much time talking about ester synchronization, but the point I want to make is we don't really care about synchronizing estrus. We want to synchronize ovulation so we can line those cows up, run them through a chute, and breed them all at the same time once and get 70-80% of them pregnant, in my mind. So there are developments and changes that are occurring that, in fact, are beginning to make this possible for beef animals. And so I just wanted to make sure you understood that. But what I want to focus the rest of my talk on is the use of sex semen. So let me explain what that is for a minute. Next slide. So some work done a number of years ago at Belchville where they just measured the amount of DNA in a 1,000 sperm showed that, in fact, clearly there were two populations of sperm. And if you look at those two little humps there on the slide, in fact, in the left-hand side are sperm that contain a Y chromosome. The peak on the right-hand side are sperm that contain an X chromosome. Why is that important? Obviously, as you all know, those with the Y chromosome are going to make male babies. Those with the X chromosome are going to make female babies. And so as it turns out in bulls, there's 3.84% less DNA in sperm that are going to make males than in sperm that are going to make females. So my wife says that's proof enough that males are genetically inferior. They certainly have less DNA, okay? So the question then comes, what can you do to sort those sperm? And so this is could be a very complicated slide, but it's really fairly simple. So you run sperm in the funnel. You teach the little suckers to line up single file. You run them through that little tiny tube down there at 65 miles an hour. You shine a laser on them and you make them fluoresce. And then based on the amount of fluorescence, that tells you how much DNA is in them, and you sort them into a pink tube or a blue tube. Now, folks, there's a little splatter problem when you hit those tubes, okay? At 65 miles an hour, so as you might guess, this technology has taken a little bit of development, all right? And so we put a layer of viscous fluid in the bottom to cushion them before they hit the wall of the tube and that sort of thing. But why is this important? Well, the next slide tells me why I think it's important, and that is the most universal use of this, in my mind, is going to be in the beef industry and to have your heifers produce your replacement heifers. Now, why do I say that? Well, first of all, your heifers ought to be your best genetics if you're making any genetic improvement, right? Therefore, this allows you to make much more rapid genetic improvement. Now, my problem is, I know very few producers who can tell me precisely what their genetic program is and what it is they're improving, okay? And that's not meant to be, I know very few professors that can tell me the same thing. So the problem is, it's difficult to define genetic improvement for a lot of people, okay? And in fact, with this current trend of wanting every beef cow to look the same, every carcass to look the same, I've spent enough time where C.J. Mucklow is in Steamboat to know that a beef cow that's going to do well there is likely to be quite a different animal than a beef cow that's going to do well in Mississippi or Florida or even in southern Kansas, okay? And so I think part of our problem is that we can't control the environment we run cows in, and therefore, adapt our cows to environment, we're going to have some variation. Point I wanted to make that heifer calves weigh about 6 pounds less than bull calves. So all of a sudden, you can put a lot less focus on low birth weight EPDs and a lot more focus on genetics for the things you want, because heifer calves are going to be smaller to start with. So that helps solve some of that problem. Last thing then is that in my opinion, the biggest problem in ranching in the West is this constant dilemma the producers have that we need to match our cows to the environment so they can travel far enough in the day, get enough to eat, that they can lactate, that they can get pregnant, that they can do all of these things and yet produce a calf that's going to do well in the feedlot and produce a good carcass. So that's a dilemma that often leads to producers in keeping bigger and bigger heifers to have more and more problems matching their environment. What this would let you do is maintain a maternal line of cows, breed the heifers, to have the heifers, breed them all into a terminal cross sire to get the production, hopefully, in the feedlot and the carcass characteristics. But you don't have to give up so much in terms of your cow herd. So in my mind, that's where this is going to be important. And the next slide just shows you then these are a group of heifers that came from, that were the result of early breeding with sex semen. 19 to 21 of these heifers were in fact the right sex. There are two bulls hanging around in there. Okay. This technology, in fact, is about 90 to 93% the right sex now on probably 80 or 90,000 calves. Right? And the next slide just shows some of the very first heifers born as a result of their mothers being bred with sex semen and their heifer calves born as a result of themselves being bred with sex semen. Okay? So, let me just then conclude by saying that, in fact, this technology works everywhere that good in horses, sheep, pigs. We can save it for the bullpen, humans. Okay, this technology works for essentially all mammalian species. So it's very effective, and it works well in a number of cases. Now, let me just finish then by saying that, in fact, before you use any procedure to modify reproductive performance, you have to be certain that the procedure will advance your goals and that it makes sense based on your available resources, okay? A well-designed crossbreeding program results in increased conception rates, calf survival, weaning rates, reproductive performance, and longevity, which results in increased lifetime productivity and profits. Next. In general, beef heifers should be bred before the cow herd to maximize their chances of rebreeding as first calf heifers and remaining in the herd. The calving breeding season should be limited and, in most cases, matched to the available forage. And finally, in special cases, treatments for synchronization of estrus can induce puberty. It can also induce estrus in postpartum cows and can enhance reproductive performance. But again, you have to think about the cost, and you have to think about whether those cows are really matched to your production setting anyway or not. Okay. And finally, breeding soundness exams for bulls are a key strategy to increase reproductive performance and reduce the cost in nearly all cow herds. Thank you.